program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Audio Journal's Young at Heart. The book selections for this hour are designed for elementary and middle grade listeners. This program is supported in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. My name is Lavender, and I'm happy to be with you today. I will continue reading from the book, Charlie Joe Jackson's Guide to Not Reading, by Tommy Greenwald. After shaking off the catcher's suggestion of a knuckleball and a curve, mainly because, as we both knew, I didn't know how to throw either one, I wound up and fired my best fastball. Whack! Andrew scorched one that looked like it was heading to the right center field gap. With his speed, a certain inside-the-park game-winning homer. But wait! There, out of nowhere, comes a blur. It's none other than right fielder and relentless reader Jake Katz, who had somehow managed to stop dreaming about books long enough to race to the ball, adjust his glasses, track it down, and make an incredible, diving, game-saving catch. Holy moly! Needless to say, it was Jake who had his Billy's Bargain moment. He was carried off the field, not me. I was neither the hero nor the goat. I was just a lucky kid who had dodged two bullets, the baseball and the book. Chapter 21. Reading Makes You Blind. Show me a kid with straight A's, and I'll show you a kid with glasses. Maybe not 100% of the time, but definitely at least 90. The smart kids are the ones with the bad eyes. The reason? Simple. Too many small words on a page. You don't have to be an optometrist to know that a person who uses his eyes too much will wear them out faster than someone who uses his eyes for less challenging activities, say, for example, closing them during science class. Take it from this 2020 guy, if you don't want to be called Four Eyes. Forget the books. Meanwhile, there were only 6 weeks left in the school year, which meant one thing, those dreaded two words that no kid at my school ever wants to hear. Position paper. The position paper is God's way of saying, before you get to enjoy the fruits of summer, you're going to have to suffer through some serious homework. Basically, it involves picking a topic, capital punishment, say, or child obesity, or smoking in movies, doing a ton of research, which involves reading a ton of books, and presenting a 6-page paper out loud in class to all the teachers in the English department. I know, right? Talk about capital punishment. It was obvious that my Billy's Bargain moment on the pitcher's mound, combined with the impending doom of the position paper, made the situation a full-fledged emergency. So naturally, on the night before the deadline for picking a topic, I was in Megan's room, lying on her bed with her stuffed animals. What is it with girls and stuffed animals? Begging for help. I warned you about the position paper, was the first thing she said. You didn't listen. She didn't really lift my spirits when she told me that writing her position paper was the hardest thing she ever had to do in her life. Beating out the other hardest thing she ever had to do in her life, which involved telling the pound, slightly insane capital of the high school football team that despite his driving all over our front lawn to prove his love, she still didn't want to go out with him. As I sat there tossing one of her teddy bears up and down, getting more and more nervous, I told her about the frightening Billy's bargain episode on the baseball field. All she said to that was, "Jake Katz saved the game? That's awesome!" Then I noticed a book lying on her desk. Clicks and double clicks. As much as I disliked books, I had to admit that was a pretty interesting title. "What's that book about?" I asked Megan. She threw it to me. "Read it and find out." "No, seriously." She grabbed it back. "It's actually this really cool book about how cliques are bad for kids, how they're an epidemic in school, and how the internet is just making it harder for teachers and guidance counselors to deal with them." She opened up her laptop. "I'm writing a paper about it." Now, typically, talk of textbooks and papers is my cue to leave, but all of a sudden, a light bulb went off in my head. Clicks! Boys! Girls! Hold on a minute. Suddenly, a beautiful, perfect, fully formed plan materialized in my brain. "I got it!" I shouted, throwing Megan's teddy bear onto the bed so hard that it knocked over her giraffe, her turtle, and two of her little penguins. The next day, I found Timmy hanging out in the hall with a couple of kids who had decided to still be his friend even after Hannah broke up with him. They probably figured she might change her mind, and they wanted to be there when he got her back. I called him over. "Timmy, got a sec?" "Sure." I pulled him into an empty classroom so no one else could hear us. "I want to run something by you." "What?" This wasn't going to be easy, but I had to be upfront with Timmy because I needed him on my side. "We all know that you went out with Hannah to get back at me." Timmy was offended. "That's crazy. And Hannah went out with you because she felt bad for you," I added. This time, Timmy just looked at his shoes. "You know it's true," I insisted. "That's how she rolls. She's not like the rest of us. She likes to do nice things, and she doesn't care about what other people think." Timmy thought about it. He was a pretty well-liked kid, but he knew that he wasn't really in Hannah's league. A feeling I knew all too well. "Come on, that's what's so great about her," I added. Timmy sighed, and he didn't have to say anything. I could tell that he wasn't about to argue with me. "So, what's your point?" he said instead. "I'm going to set up Jake and Hannah." You know that expression, his eyes bugged out of his head? I'd always thought that was a ridiculous exaggeration until I saw Timmy at that moment. "No way! Yes way! No way! Yes way!" Timmy took a deep breath. He'd had an up-down, yet no doubt about it, king of the hill one second, back among the regular people the next, and this might be one roller coaster ride too many. "Why? Did Jake ask you to? Just because she went out with me, suddenly every guy thinks he has a chance?" My turn to take a deep breath. "Actually, it was my idea." Timmy was speechless. For about a second and a half, then he said the only logical thing. "Why?" "Because my position paper is going to be about why cliques are bad for kids, and if I can get the two of them to go out, it would prove that two kids from totally different worlds could ignore peer pressure and go out," I explained. Actually, Hannah was the one who'd feel the peer pressure. Jake would feel nothing but claps on the back from his odd and amazing friends. "But isn't she still going out with James?" Timmy asked, looking to poke holes in my plan. She was indeed. James was a one-man clique buster himself, one of those freaks of nature who managed to do drama club and play sports, and it somehow all worked. Girls loved him. James and Hannah had been going out for about 2 weeks, well, past Katie Friedman's 9-day expiration date, but there were rumors they were on the rocks. "That won't last, trust me," I said. He eyed me suspiciously, like he knew I was up to something. "It feels like you're leaving something out," he said. I'd known Timmy a long time. We'd been through a lot together. I lowered my voice. "Well, here's the thing. You know that deal we used to have?" Timmy licked his lips, clearly thinking about free ice cream sandwiches. "Yeah? Well, ever since we got caught, I've been trying to come up with a new plan." He suddenly got where I was going and just started shaking his head in disbelief. I pretended not to notice. "Well, anyway," I continued, "I figured Jake would be so happy going out with Hannah that he wouldn't mind just doing me one little favor." Timmy knew the answer to the question he was about to ask, but he asked anyway. "What favor?" "Reading all my books for the position paper." Timmy didn't say anything, so I filled the silence. "Well, what do you think? Awesome, right?" Timmy let out a whistle. "So let me get this straight," he said. "The girl you've had a crush on since kindergarten, the girl that made you so jealous when I went out with her that you couldn't sleep for 2 weeks, the girl that you plan on marrying someday, whether she agrees to it or not, you're going to set her up with Jake Katz just so you can get out of reading some books?" Jeez, did you have to put it that way? "Yeah," I answered. He laughed and scratched his head. Suddenly, I wondered what I would do if he told me it was a terrible idea. But Timmy didn't think it was a terrible idea. In fact, he had a pretty good idea of his own. "Instead of being sneaky about it, why don't you just tell them both that you're doing it for your paper? That way they could become part of your experiment, and they'd probably both get really into it," Timmy said. I blinked. "You think?" Timmy nodded. "Definitely. Hannah loves to surprise people. Like you said, she's not like the rest of us. I learned that early on in our relationship." It occurred to me that Timmy's use of the word relationship to describe their brief moment in time together was a bit extreme, but why bring that up when he was being so supportive? "I wouldn't exactly call it a relationship," I said. "Sometimes a guy just can't help himself." Chapter 22. If you have to read, read about girls. It helps you understand them better. We all know how painful reading can be, so if you have to read, at least make sure you get something important out of it. And learning how to deal with girls is important. Therefore, you should only read books with lots of girls in them. It's a great way to learn about these mysterious, fascinating creatures. I should mention this tip is primarily for boys. I suppose for girls, the reverse is true. But I wouldn't know. Katie Friedman had never worried about being popular, as long as she was popular, meaning she wasn't one to be concerned about being in with the in kids because she didn't really have an in kid personality. But all sorts of different kinds of kids liked Katie because she always had good insights into people's behavior and was generous and not too judgmental. Now that I think about it, she probably will make a good therapist someday. She did, however, have a hardcore group of friends she cared deeply about. A bunch of smarty pants types who all shared the same interests, namely a complete lack of interest in anything other people were interested in a total fascination with things nobody else even knew existed. The day after my conversation with Timmy, I found Katie and her friends in the middle of a big discussion about why the original cast of the 1975 Broadway production of Chicago, starring Gwen Verdon and Cheetah Rivera, was way better than the original cast of the 1996 production of Chicago, starring B.B. Nierowith and Anne Reinking. Even though the revival was way more successful than the original. The only reason I knew this on such a frighteningly detailed level was because I had heard this particular debate about 7,000 times. It was not information that I, nor any middle school kid, should ever need or want to have. I knew that Chicago was where the Cubs played, and personally, that was good enough for me, which was why I didn't feel the slightest bit guilty for interrupting rudely. Katie, I need to talk to you now! Katie looked up from her tea, a beverage that middle school kids drink to look like high school kids, and high school kids drink to look like college kids, and as usual, made me her priority. The girl could give lessons and being a good friend. Over here, she said, walking to the forbidden zone. In the old days, when our school was a high school, the forbidden zone was the smoking section of the cafeteria. It still had kind of a naughty, scary quality about it, so no one ever sat there. She pulled up a chair and patted another one for me. What sort of trouble has my favorite scoundrel gotten himself into now? I wasn't sure what she meant by scoundrel, but it had the word favorite attached to it, so I let it go. No trouble, she laughed. You don't come to me unless you're either in trouble or you're hatching a plan, so spill. I grinned. Right. Like I said, no trouble. A horrified look crossed her face. Oh, God, this is no time for one of your schemes. You need to be laying low and playing by the rules for the foreseeable future. Did I mention that Katie was the one person in the world who knew absolutely everything about me? That I sucked my thumb until I was 7? That I was afraid of the dark until I was 9, that I was too scared to sleep over anyone's house until I was about, well, now, and that Timmy and I had our books for ice cream sandwiches arrangement for 2 years until he ruined everything with the telling on me, then dating Hannah thing. Katie knew all that. She even knew that the mere mention of Mark Twain could bring me to tears. So obviously, she knew what she was talking about when she told me I should stop what I was about to start. Only as usual, I wasn't listening. So I want to set up Jake Katz and Hannah. Do you think she'll go for it? She likes to shock people, right? She looked at me. How clueless are you? She asked. Don't you remember what happened when you talked to Eliza about Timmy? This is different, I said. Different how? She asked. Don't worry, I'll explain later, I went on. Katie sighed. She looked at me like she was on a cliff, and I was the water, and she couldn't decide if she wanted to jump in or not. I don't want to know, she finally said. I exhaled and spoke at the same time. My question is, do you think I need to give Hannah something to get her to do it? Like, what do you think I need to give her to make her go along with the plan? Katie thought about it for about 8 seconds. She loves the Beatles, right? If you really want to be, sure. Give her one of your cool Beatles tchotchkes. That ought to do the trick, she said. I think tchotchkes is a Jewish word, but don't quote me. And if I'm spelling it right, you can thank the computer. No questions, no judging, just the right answer. I hugged her, and as she walked back to her friends, she looked back at me and said, "Just be careful. That's why Katie Friedman is awesome." But the other part, the I'll explain later part about me getting Jake to read my books, I never did explain that to Katie, and she didn't find out about it until it was too late. The next day at lunch, Hannah Spivero was finishing the last of the three chocolate puddings she had every day for dessert. I told you she was perfect. I sat down next to her and cut to the chase. "You and James broke up, right?" She giggled. "Yup. He's amazing, but it didn't work out." I wasn't sure how that made sense, but I didn't have time to analyze it. "Do you like anyone else?" "Not at the moment. Why are you interested?" she said. I know, that sounds mean, because of course she knew I was interested, but it wasn't. We always played this silly game where she would flirt with me and I would never have the nerve to actually flirt back. But this time was different. This was no time for games. I said, "I need you to do something for me." She put down her pudding. This was a side of me she'd never seen before. All business, brisk and serious, commanding even. Absolutely no patheticness whatsoever. "What is it, Uncle Charlie?" Usually I wasn't crazy about it when people gave me nicknames like Chow or Chuck or Chuckles or CJ. Why couldn't I be just plain old Charlie Joe? But when Hannah came up with Uncle Charlie, it sounded like the most natural nickname in the world. Almost like music. The most... Dang it, I was getting distracted again. I took her hand. It's amazing how brave a desperate man could be. "I think you should go out with Jake Katz." Her eyes narrowed in confusion. I was confusing her. This was definitely a side benefit of my plan. Anytime I caused Hannah to feel any kind of real emotion, it could definitely be considered a triumph. "Why would I do that?" she asked. "Because if you do, you would have my undying love forever," I answered, looking deeply into her glowing eyes. "I have that already," she answered back, as if it were the most obvious thing in the world. Which it was. I remembered Katie's suggestion. And much as it pained me, it was the only way. Hannah Spivero had broken my heart long enough. It was time to break my own heart. I sighed. "Okay, listen. If you do this for me, you can have my original limited edition collector's item, Dead Babies, Beatles, Yesterday and Today, LP album cover," I said mournfully. Just a quick explanation. One time, the Beatles put out an album where the cover was a picture of them holding a bunch of bloody baby parts, which became known as the Dead Babies cover. Even though the babies were clearly fake, like dolls, people were still totally grossed out, and the Beatles had to change the cover immediately. As a result, there were barely any of the original covers printed, but I was lucky enough to own one. A birthday gift from my dad, who was still trying to make up for the Mark Twain disaster. It was yet another element of Hannah's amazingness that she loved the Beatles as much as I did, and surely she would love owning this album cover almost as much as I did. Wow, you would actually part with that just to make people think that I like Jake Katz? I don't get it. I'm not interested in dating Jake Katz. So why would I suddenly agree to go out with him? No one would believe it anyway. She winked. It's almost as crazy as people thinking I'm suddenly in love with you. Ouch, that was a shot to the gut. I soldiered on braver, silently reminding myself that a truly great man fights on even when the odds are against him. Dun, dun, dun. That's not necessarily true. I mean, I know, yeah, everyone knows I've always kind of had a thing for you. Kind of had a thing? Who was I kidding? But it's possible that other kids could think that maybe deep down you could like someone like me or Jake. She giggled, and suddenly I felt the need to backtrack a bit. I'm not saying it's true, not at all, but it's not like it's impossible, right? Hannah looked at me like she was looking into the future, like she was thinking, well, God knows I don't like this little puppy dog licking his paws right in front of me, but it's not out of the realm of human existence that maybe someday down the road I might find him reasonably attractive. I suppose not, she finally admitted, giving me a tiny sliver of my dignity back. I suddenly remembered Timmy's advice to be upfront about the reason. I'm glad we got that out of the way, I announced. So here's the thing. I'm writing my position paper on why cliques are bad for kids and why it's important that we figure out a way to stop them. I want to show people that it's possible, and the best way to do that is for someone like you to go out with someone like Jake. Hannah looked at me. I mean, really looked at me. Possibly for the first time since she stuck her tongue out at me 7 years ago. That's interesting, she said. Please mark the day and time. May 11th, 4 a.m. Because for the first and possibly only time in my life, Hannah Spavero found me, or at least something I said interesting. For that brief, shining moment, I had the upper hand. It felt fantastic, but she quickly recovered. Moment over. Why didn't you say that in the first place? She said. That sounds like a cool project. I would have done it even without the awesome Beatles album cover. Hannah Spavero had an uncanny ability to make you feel happy and sad in the same sentence. Deal, she said. Deal, I repeated. For some weird reason, I stuck out my hand and she shook it like we were doing a business deal. The only thing is, you can't tell anybody why you're doing it until I present my paper, I said importantly. It'll be our little secret, said Hannah Spavero, winking. Can I have my hand back now? Chapter 23. If you absolutely, positively have to read a book, make sure it's on a topic you like. If you are a boy, you probably like books about sports, spies, superheroes, getting lost in the woods. If you are a girl, you probably like books about sensitive, hunky vampires with a weakness for brunettes. If you are Jake Katz, you like books with words in them. Jake Katz is a really good guy, despite his love of books. His mother, on the other hand, is really kind of annoying. She belongs in what my parents refer to as the room. Let me explain. My parents invented the room. It's an imaginary place where they put all the adults they know that never shut up about themselves or their families or their kids and how amazing they all are without ever taking a breath long enough to ask you anything about how you're doing. My parents love the idea of all these incredibly self-absorbed people in one room, bragging on and on. No one listening to a word anyone else is saying because they're all too busy yakking about themselves. Jake Katz's mom isn't just in the room, she's a founding member, which is why my mom wasn't looking forward to taking me to Jake's house that Friday afternoon. She loved Jake and thought he and his study habits were a good influence on me, of course, but she didn't exactly relish the idea of listening to Mrs. Katz blab on about their vacation house in Nantucket, her daughter's freshman year on the Brown University crew, her husband's promotion to chief executive in charge of making money, or just her family's general wonderfulness. When we pulled up, I hopped right out of the car so my mom could make a quick getaway. But as usual, Ms. Katz was already running out the door, yelling, "Claire, we have so much to talk about!" She was already mid-brag by the time she reached the driveway. My mom rolled down the window and called me over. "It's like I have a sign on my forehead that says, 'Talk my ear off,'" she whispered. Then she got out of the car and greeted Mrs. Katz with a big smile. "How are things?" she said warmly. That's how my mom rolls. She's a good one. As Jake and I escaped up to his room, I could vaguely hear Mrs. Katz start to talk about the new Lexus SUV she was completely enamored of, and that the gas mileage was so much better than you might think. And my mom agreeing that, yes, it was a terrific car. A lot of nerds just like to talk about nerdy things, like science and Jar Jar Binks. Jake wasn't like that. He liked to talk about girls a lot. But the cool thing about Jake was he was never one of those kids who felt sorry for himself because he wasn't Mr. Popular or anything. He still had a certain confidence about him. It was almost as if he realized that his time to shine would come later in life. And so he took everything that happened to him now in stride. Right now, he was playing computer Scrabble and taking in stride the fact that he'd probably be going solo to the end of the year dance. The thing I like about going by myself is the fact that I'm not going to feel like I have to stay with my date the whole night, he was saying. If I feel like getting some punch, I can go get some punch. If I feel like hanging with my friends, I can hang with my friends. It's actually going to be a real advantage, not having to be tied down to one woman. It was hard to change the subject with Jake when he was on a roll, but I had to give it a shot. "Dude, that's still like a month away," I said. "There's a lot going on before that. Our position papers, for example." "Oh, right." Talking about schoolwork bored Jake, probably because he was so unchallenged by it. Still, I had an agenda to keep. "So anyway, mine's gonna be about cliques in school and about why they exist and if they're bad." Jake snorted. "Of course they're bad. Cliques stink." He was passionate on the subject for good reason. "So my plan is to show that cliques can be overcome, even eliminated, if only kids would give it a chance. And I want to prove it by giving an example of two people from very different cliques going out." He looked at me. He was too smart not to know what I was up to. Who'd you have in mind?
Well, I was thinking you and Hannah.
I held my breath. He laughed. That's crazy. I'm no idiot, Charlie Joe. I know the deal. I could set my mind to getting someone like Hannah or any of the really popular girls for about 10 years, and I'm pretty sure it would never happen.
Well, that's what's great about Hannah. She's not like all the other popular girls. She's different. And it just so happens I already talked to her about it, and she's totally into it.
She wants you to ask her out.
I bet she can't wait, Jake said. It's going to be so cool, I continued. But here's the thing. We're not going to tell anyone. It was my idea, so we can see how the school reacts. And then I can analyze it for my position paper.
Jake pondered this.
So, it's not that she likes me. It's that she's agreed to be part of a social experiment, he said, fully grasping the situation.
Something like that, I admitted. But my guess is, once she finds out what you're really like, she'll probably end up liking you anyway.
You think so? Really? He asked.
Even though it seemed like a long shot, and the possibility scared me to death, for some reason I actually believed it.
Really, really, I answered. Jake stared deeply into his computer, as if asking it for guidance.
Finally, he looked up at the ceiling. Wow, he said. Like, wow. Okay, let's do it.
Now you're talking, I said, smacking him on the back.
Come on, let's go out and shoot some hoops.
Okay, he said, folding up his laptop.
He seemed like he wasn't quite sure what had just happened.
Thanks, I think, he said.
You guys are going to be awesome together, I said as we headed outside.
We were halfway through our game of H-O-R-S-E. I was winning by one letter when I casually brought up another subject as if I had just thought of it.
Oh, dude, one more thing. Is it cool if you help me with some of the books I have to read for my position paper? Maybe you could just read them really quickly since you read so fast and everything, and then kind of give me the lowdown of what's in them.
Jake was dribbling around with an extra spring in his step, already feeling Hannah's wind beneath his wings.
It was hard to tell what he was thinking, so I decided to keep talking. The thing is, I got this list of books from my sister, and it's totally brutal. They're so freaking long and hard, and I'm totally nervous. I'm not going to be ready.
Suddenly, he looked at me and smiled, the glorious, untroubled smile of a Hannah dated.
No problemo, my man. What are friends for?
And then he came back and beat me, H-O-R-S-E, to H-O-R-S.
So I talked to Timmy, Katie, Hannah, and Jake. They all thought it was a good plan, and I was a genius, not including Katie. The stage was set. The die was cast. The egg was ready to hatch. I may not like to read, but I know a good metaphor when I see one.
Part 4.
Chapter 24. It seemed like a good idea at the time. That Friday night at dinner, my mom asked me why I was in such a good mood.
Because I'm going to a party tonight, I answered.
Can you not eat like a dog? She answered back, which didn't have to do with anything except maybe for the fact that I was licking my plate at that particular moment.
Mom doesn't mean just tonight, Dad chimed in. She means in general. You seem to be in a great mood, which is interesting considering you have your big paper coming up, and we all know how much you love schoolwork. I knew what they were getting at. They didn't really want to know why I was happy. They wanted to know if I was up to my old tricks. Megan, who was eating, texting, and combing her hair all at the same time, heard the word schoolwork and looked up. What are we talking about? Why, I'm happy, I said, helping myself to some more pasta. My sister looked at my parents. Come on, you guys, give Charlie Joe a break, she said. Bless her heart. He's been working pretty hard lately, and he picked a really cool topic for his position paper. Oh, said my mom. What's it about? This could have gone one of two ways. I could have told them, which definitely would have led to at least 14 more questions on the matter. Or I could have not told them, which might have led to 14 more questions on the matter. I'd rather keep it a surprise, I said, which didn't really make any sense now that I think about it. My parents looked at each other and decided to accept it, or at least for now, let it go. Well, I look forward to reading it, said my dad, who then proceeded to lick his own plate, much to my mom's horror. Do I live in a kettle? She sputtered before giving her plate to Moose and Coco so they wouldn't completely miss out. Middle school parties are all pretty much the same. Cold pizza, soggy cookies, flat soda, deafening music, a couple of kids kissing, a ton of kids pretending not to look but actually staring at the kids kissing. And the little sister of the host constantly coming in and out, supposedly to see if the chips bowl needs refilling, but really just to check out what was going on and report back to the parents that nobody had overdosed on potato chips and was projectile vomiting on the couch. That Friday night at Kelly Dunn's house, the stars of the show were Jake Katz and Hannah Spivero. Jake had asked Hannah out at lunch 2 days earlier, and it took about 8 minutes for the entire school to know. I guess a good way to describe the reaction was shock and awe. Hannah's friends were shocked, and Jake's friends were awed. Their first date was Kelly's party. You can pretty much imagine the reaction. They weren't making out or anything, but they were doing something almost as shocking. They were talking and laughing. And while other people couldn't take their eyes off of them, it seemed like Jake and Hannah couldn't take their eyes off each other. I realized I had never really seen either of them laugh and talk so much at the same time. Naturally, I had mixed emotions. I was delighted that my experiment was working so well, and I was miserable that my experiment was working so well. The very idea that head cheerleader Hannah Spivero and head bookworm Jake Katz were hanging out at a party together was already too much for people to take. But when they began to dance, the whole party ground to a halt. At first, people stopped talking altogether and stared open-mouthed. You could hear a pin drop. Then there was a new kind of buzz in the conversation, kind of a freaked-out whispering, lots of, oh my God, that kind of thing. It took Kelly Dunn's little sister, who had come into the room on one of her periodic spying missions, to blurt out what everyone was thinking. Holy crap, she said. And it took Teddy Spivero, Hannah's obnoxious, annoying twin brother, to blurt out what I was thinking. Hey, Jackson, what happened? All those years panting after my sister and little Jake Katz gets her? But don't worry, maybe one day that will be you. He took a deep swig of his punch. Yeah, one day in the year, 2000 and never. Everyone cracked up. Even I had to admit, that was a pretty good one. Chapter 25. When you're more than halfway through a book, pick up the pace. Skim a bit and get it over with as quickly as possible. You know those people who finish a book and then say, I'm so sad it's over. I have news for them. The person who wrote the book isn't sad it's over. Otherwise, he or she would have kept writing. In fact, it's the opposite. They're relieved. Ugh, thrilled. Ready to celebrate. It should be the same for the reader. Finishing a book is cause for rejoicing, not regret. So hurry up. You're more than halfway home. Pedal to the metal, people. It's pretty much an unwritten rule that at every school assembly at every school in the nation, people sit with their own clique. Jocks sit with jocks. Dorks sit with dorks. Chinese kids sit with Chinese kids, and so on. But not at our school. Not anymore, because here's the thing. Ever since Jake and Hannah started going out and actually seemed to like each other, the whole rest of the school had slowly, carefully, warily started to stray from their cliques. Listen, I'm not saying it was a social earthquake or anything. It was just a few small things here and there, like the way people sat at school assemblies, for example. At today's assembly, which happened to be about why the cafeteria had replaced all the good snacks that were bad for you with bad snacks that were good for you, Jake sat next to Hannah, who sat next to Jack Humphreys, jock, who sat next to Mark Fricker, dork, who sat next to Lauren Hu, Chinese kid. It was a beautiful thing to see. After the assembly, Ms. Farrell was standing near the auditorium with Mr. Dormer and Ms. Axelrod, two social studies teachers whom everybody assumed were going out just because they were the two best-looking teachers in the school. I knew Dormer was good-looking because all the moms, including, I'm horrified to say, my own, would get all giggly whenever they saw him. I knew Ms. Axelrod was good-looking because I have two eyes. In any event, Ms. Farrell saw me and called me over. Charlie Joe, why were all the kids sitting with different kids today? I've never seen that happen before in all my years at this school. I know, I said. Can you believe it? I didn't want to get too far into the topic. For some reason, whenever Ms. Farrell had an interesting observation to make about the student body, good or bad, she made it to me. Sometimes the observations were neither good nor bad, but just random. Like, why are all the boys in this school so fascinated with skateboarding? Or, what's with all the girls suddenly straightening their hair? I guess she assumed I would care. Not a very accurate assumption. Mr. Dormer put his arm around me. Mr. Jackson, I hear you're a very bright kid, but a bit of a slacker. My first thought was, why wasn't it Ms. Axelrod who was putting her arm around me? My second thought was, deny. I wouldn't say that's true at all. I tried to slip out of his grasp, but he tightened his grip. Well, I hope to have you in my class one day, Mr. Dormer said, because we'll find out once and for all. And then he whacked me playfully on the back. In my class, the only one who's allowed to be a slacker is me. He roared at his own joke. An inexcusable violation of the comedy rule book, if you ask me. And Ms. Axelrod fake laughed right along with him. That clinched it. They were dating. Oh, Ms. Axelrod, how could you? Ms. Farrell tried to regain control of the conversation. Anyway, Charlie Joe, what are your plans for the summer? Grateful for the change in topic, I launched into a long, detailed description of my summer agenda. Not much, Mr. Dormer hijacked again. Ah, to be in your shoes, Mr. Jackson, he said. What I wouldn't give to be a kid again, except for the pimples and the position paper, of course. He ended every attempted joke with the verbal equivalent of an exclamation point. Did being handsome give him the right to be so completely not funny? Well, I gotta get to class, I said, trying to get away. Don't want to be late and give anyone the idea that I'm a slacker. Ms. Axelrod laughed at that, an actual genuine laugh which sounded nothing like her Dormer fake laugh. Mr. Dormer watched her laugh and then glared at me, officially guaranteeing me a lousy grade if I ever found myself in his class. Ms. Farrell chuckled, too, which made me feel good as usual. I loved making her laugh because even though I associated her with homework, books, and reading, I actually liked her a lot as a person. I'm looking forward to Tuesday, she said, and for a second, I had no idea what she was talking about. And then I remembered. Oh, yeah, I was presenting my position paper on Tuesday, as in 6 days from now. I'm looking forward to it, too, I said. Ms. Axelrod laughed again, even though this time I wasn't trying to be funny at all. Sunday night, 2 days before I had to present my position paper, I suddenly felt kind of guilty. It wasn't Jake reading the books for me that made me feel guilty. And it wasn't my parents and my sister not knowing that he was reading the books for me that made me feel guilty. It was that Jake was over for dinner, and my parents were telling him that he was such a good influence on me and how proud they were that I was reading so much and working so hard on my position paper. And that Jake had sneaked a glance at me and kind of shrugged as if to say, if they only knew. It was the combination of all those things that made me feel guilty. I had told my parents about a week before that I was writing about cliques in middle school, and they had agreed that it was a great topic to explore. I had showed them the books I was using for my research, which they thought looked fascinating. Then I had promptly given the books to Jake the next day in school. Now, all of a sudden, at dinner, I was having pangs of guilt. Feelings can be so inconvenient. To clear my conscience, I decided to clear the dishes. Can I get you boys any dessert before you go off to study? My mom asked. No thanks, I said, just as Jake said, yes, please. I wanted to get out of there as quickly as possible. Jake wanted ice cream. He was digging into some mint chocolate chip when the conversation got even more awkward. So, Charlie Joe tells us you're dating Hannah Spavero, my dad said. When did I say that? I complained. I had no idea where he got his information. How is it that parents always seem to know stuff? Megan tried to help. Dad, she said, middle school boys don't like to talk about things like that. But Jake was one middle school boy who was perfectly happy to talk about things like that, particularly when the things in question had to do with his new girlfriend. Yeah, it's going really well. I can't believe it, Jake said. And it's all thanks to Charlie Joe. I froze. Jake immediately looked at me like, oops. My parents, thank God, sat there. Kind of clueless. Megan said to me, you're the one who set them up? Why would you do that? I thought you were like totally in love with Hannah Spavero. Not anymore, I said. And then, by way of changing the subject, I said to Jake, so, you like mint chocolate chip, huh? I'm a coffee man myself. Upstairs in my room, Jake gave me incredibly helpful, brilliantly written chapter-by-chapter synopses of each book I was supposed to read. It probably took him about a half an hour to write them. These were actually really cool books, he said. You picked a really interesting topic. Thanks, I said. Really, thanks for everything, dude. You totally saved my life. Jake sat down on my bed. Why do you hate reading so much? I had guilt on the brain. Three synopses to read and no time for chit-chat. So I just said, I don't know. I just do. He just shook his head sadly. You don't know what you're missing. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for today. This Young at Heart program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I hope you will join us next time for Young at Heart. If you have any ideas or comments, we'd love to hear from you. I'm Lavender. Thank you for listening.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
This is Bird Note. When a pair of Western grebes decides it's time to mate, it's as if they know they have an audience for the performance they're about to give. On the still waters of an alkaline lake, they call loudly and approach one another. Each bird curves, then straightens its long neck gracefully. They then face each other, necks on the water's surface, their bills flipping up drops of water. If attraction prevails, they rush together and off they go across the water, running on the surface side by side. Standing straight up with necks held high and feet churning like propellers, they no longer look much like grebes, more like participants in Tchaikovsky's ballet Swan Lake. After their lengthy pas de deux, with wings extended like parallel sails, they plunge below the surface. What follows is the weed ceremony, each bird diving to pick up a beakful of soft vegetation. The grebes then stand up in the water, face one another, press tightly together, then drop the plants and preen. The whole courtship sequence may begin again at any time, building in intensity as spring progresses and the pair makes ready to start a new generation. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
This is a public service announcement from the Massachusetts Association for the Blind. The Massachusetts Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired provides assistive technology training for persons with visual impairments. If you or a family member are interested in receiving one-on-one specialized training, please contact 617-991-7073 or email atcenter@mabcommunity.org.
WICN Public Radio is a proud partner of Audio Journal. Audio Journal provides news, information, and entertainment to visually and print-impaired residents of central Massachusetts. Audio Journal broadcasts are made possible through the use of a portion of WICN's broadcast frequency. 90.5 WICN is Worcester's only NPR affiliate and the voice of arts and culture in central Massachusetts. Visit WICN.org for more info.